Okay, good morning, everybody. This is about 2:31, and it's March 14th. And this is going to be your last lecture on muscles. And then on Thursday, we're going to have a lecture on endocrine system, chapter 17. So there's a question about what's going to be on the next exam, which is April 4th. And indeed, it's chapters 10, 11, 17, and 12. So 10, 11, 12, and 17. 10 is skeletal muscle tissue, 11 muscles of the body, and then the introductory chapter to nervous system. All right, so not central nervous system or any of that, just the introduction to nervous system and endocrine system. So it's going to be 10, 11, 12, and 17. Yes, question.
I was looking for the endocrine lecture notes and I couldn't find it.
Oh, I got to put them up there yet. Yeah, they're not available yet. Okay, I'll make them available. And I'll make the, study guide. Yeah, there's a module in the weekly. I think there's a module. Maybe there's not one. I don't know. But next time you'll have a lecture on endocrine system anyway. Yeah. Okay. All right. So let's carry on with some muscles a little bit. Let's see. All your practicums are graded. They're online. Your quizzes are graded. They're online. The practicums are graded. They're online. And so this week we're looking at all your practicums and tests and things like that. Okay, there were a couple people that did really well on those practicums, like 100%. All right, so I know you guys can do it. I know you can do it. Just don't give up. Keep applying yourselves. And the best way to study is a little bit every day. Okay, don't push it off to the end. All right, so as far as muscles are concerned, what's the best way to know muscles by their action? What's the best way of knowing muscles by their action? By the body compartment that they're in. All right, so you're going to have to know where these muscles are located for the lab practicum. And so you're going to know about where they are in the body. And all muscles in the same body compartment are going to be what? In terms of their function. Same body compartment, they're going to be? Yeah, they're going to be synergistic. And if they're in opposite body compartments, they're going to be antagonistic. Yeah. So that's very important for you to remember. So for instance, there are two muscles in your arm. Okay, what are the two important muscles in your arm? The two biggest muscles in your arm. You've got the, let me see if I can get a picture of it up here for you. One of these are pretty good. How about this one here? Yeah, because we're missing it from there. All right, two biggest muscles in your anterior arm. You've got the biceps brachii and the brachialis. All right, students usually, or sometimes tell me, actually it's quite frequent, that the brachialis is part of the triceps brachii, but it's not. It's still in the anterior compartment. So when you're in lab, make sure you take this biceps brachii off and look for that brachialis right here, and you'll see that it's in the anterior arm. So what's the relationship between the biceps brachii and brachialis, since they're in the same body compartment? They're going to be synergists, right? And so they're going to be flexors of the forearm, or you could say flex at the elbow. Either way you want to say that is fine with me. Probably you should be aware of both of those. All right, so you got biceps brachii, brachialis, and then posterior to that is the triceps brachii. All right, and if you look at the models in lab, you'll see that it's posterior to the humerus, so it's in a different body compartment. So what's the relationship between the triceps brachii and the brachialis? Antagonistic, yeah. What's the relationship between the triceps brachii and the biceps brachii? Antagonistic, for sure you're going to have a question like that on the test, right? Pick out what muscles are antagonistic to each other. Pick out two muscles that are synergistic to each other. All right, so that is really important. All right, some muscles that I want to show you, and I might go to the web to show you some of these muscles, are muscles right here that work across the shoulder. And there are a number of them. Some of them are really easy to appreciate, like the muscle that is superior to the spine of the scapula. That's the supraspinatus, right? Muscle just inferior to the spine of the scapula. That's the infraspinatus. And then this one right here, this goes to the posterior part of the head of the humerus. That is the teres minor. All right, so I want to focus on these, as well as one more, which is the subscapularis. But you can't see the subscapularis on this model. It would have to be right in the subscapular fossa that we see right over here. But it's not shown. It's right. Okay. The muscle that I don't want to pay a whole lot of attention to right at the moment is the teres major. Okay, and we see that the teres major goes to the anterior side of the humerus, the teres minor to the posterior side. So let's consider the action of the teres minor first. All right, when it contracts, what can a muscle do when it's excited? It can only contract. It can't push. So it's going to pull this posterior part of the humerus, right, into the scapula. And there's other fixators right here that are going to fix the scapula in position. So what's the motion when the posterior side of the humerus is pulled toward midline? Okay. Yeah, there's some adduction involved right there. Okay. But what I want you to appreciate, I guess this is why I mention it, right? If you flex at the elbow and the posterior side of the humerus gets pulled toward the scapula, it's going to cause a rotation, right? And that's a lateral rotation of the humerus. All right. So that's the teres minor. Now the teres major, when it contracts, it's going to adduct a little bit as well, but it's also going to rotate. Right, now, what about the insertion of the teres major and minor? Are they in the same part of the humerus or opposite? Opposite, so their motion is going to be antagonistic. So the teres major is a medial rotator of the humerus, but the teres minor is a lateral rotator of the humerus. Okay, if that's too noisy out there, I can close the door. Okay, so notice that the teres major inserts into the humerus way distal to the head of the humerus right here. It's not really part of the shoulder joint, right? I mean, it works on the shoulder, but the tendon does not form part of the joint capsule. But the tendon from the infraspinatus, the teres minor, and what you can't see right here, also the tendon from the supraspinatus and the tendon from the subscapularis all are integral parts of the joint capsule of the shoulder joint right here. So anytime you injure any of these muscles right here, you have a tendency to injure the joint capsule as well. So these four muscles form a pretty important anatomical unit that we call the rotator cuff. So the rotator cuff is formed from the supraspinatus, the infraspinatus, the teres minor, and the subscapularis, because all of these muscles, right, help form the joint capsule or the fibrous capsule around the shoulder joint. So I want to show you something about that, but I want to write that on the board, make sure you know. All right, so rotator cuff, are four muscles. And it can be abbreviated with this little acronym called SITS, SITS, right? And so this first S right here is for subscapularis. Do you know where to find that one? That's in the subscapular fossa. All right, what about this I? What do you think I stands for? Infraspinatus. Okay, this T, now this is the most confusing of the four muscles that make the rotator cuff. It's T standing for teres. All right, but how many teres muscles do you know? You know two. You know the teres major and teres minor. And we're still on the board right here. Which one goes up and helps form the fibrous capsule of the shoulder joint? Is it the teres major here or teres minor? It's the teres minor. All right, so maybe the best thing is just to memorize that. And then we got another S. That stands for supraspinatus. All right, so that's kind of the order I like. Subscapularis, infraspinatus, teres minor, and supraspinatus. All right, and the teres minor, and you can see the infraspinatus right here, are rotators. What kind of rotators? Of the humerus. Since they're going to the posterior humerus, it's going to pull the posterior part of the humerus to midline. So it's a lateral rotation. A lot of people can have injured their rotator cuff, and there's a pretty easy diagnostic that you can do for somebody to tell if it's a rotator cuff injury. All right, you can have them flex at the elbow or flex the forearm and then apply some pressure to try to laterally rotate. And if they kind of scream in agony, okay, that's a really nice indication that their rotator cuff is torn, because all those muscles converge together to help form that fibrous capsule. Probably all of you have heard about that rotator cuff. Now you can actually see what role it plays in the arm. So let's look at this model right here. Maybe you'll see a better appreciation of it. Let's see if I can get that on the screen. Doc cam, someplace. That looks good. Turn on the camera. Oh, nice. Okay. All right, so you can see that. What about if I do that? Is that even better? Maybe. If we focus. Focus. Uh-huh. Pretty good. Okay, so what do we have right here? Here's the scapula, right? So here's the medial border. Here's the acromion process. Here's the spine of the scapula. Here is the clavicle coming to articulate with the acromion process. And this muscle in the supraspinous fossa, that's the supraspinatus. Here is the infraspinatus. All right, and then we've got the teres major right here. All right, so let me flip it over a little bit. And then here is the subscapularis. All right, subscapularis. Now what about the, oh, did I bring the wrong model? What about the teres minor? This must be part of the teres minor right here. All right, so can you see that the supraspinatus, here's the tendon from the supraspinatus helping form the joint capsule right there. Here's the infraspinatus. You can see the tendon helping form the joint capsule as well as the teres minor. And then here's the subscapularis, and you can see the tendon from the subscapularis also forming part of the joint capsule around the shoulder. So all of those then make up the rotator cuff. Here's the teres major, right? But look where it inserts, way distal to the fibrous capsule of the shoulder. It's way down over here. So it's not part of the rotator cuff. So we can flip that around. Here's that teres major once again, not part of the rotator cuff. It's the teres minor right there. All right. Anybody have any questions on that? So make sure you know the names of the muscles that help form rotator cuff. And can I get back? Display 2. PC. I can't get back. What about now? All right. All right, so let's work antagonism just a little bit before maybe I go to the web. So what are some muscles that you have to know? Okay, I mentioned this, I think, last time. All of these rectus muscles in the back, all right, posterior trunk, and we can see them going from rib to rib, or from one rib down, skipping a number of ribs and then inserting into another rib right here, right? Or they could go from a rib to a transverse process, or they can go from a spinous process to another spinous process, or spinous process to a transverse process. So you have all kinds of muscles in the back for stabilizing the vertebral column. And all of these muscles right here, even in lab, we're going to call all of these groups right here the erector spinae. So you don't have to know all of these different muscles, so I'm going to simplify it a little bit, but you do have to know what the action is of these muscles, of the posterior trunk or the back. All right, and so what's the action of the iliocostalis and the spinalis? What's the relationship between iliocostalis and spinalis? And longissimus, these are all going to be what? They're going to be synergists because they're in the same body compartment. Now, in particular, what's the motion that's produced? Well, and remember, a muscle can only contract, and that's when you straighten your vertebral column out, or maybe you can even hyperextend it. So all of these are going to be extensors of the vertebral column. Right, so that's what you have to know about erector spinae. That's the only one you have to know. Erector spinae is an extensor of the vertebral column. All right, but now let's say we want to, a question might be, what's an antagonist to the erector spinae? Where would you start to look? The anterior trunk. All right, so let's look in this anterior trunk right here. And indeed, we see a number of muscles in the anterior trunk, including the rectus abdominis right here, and for sure you got to know origin and insertion of the rectus abdominis. All right, one attachment point is the pubic bone, the other attachment point is the xiphoid process right here. And when that rectus abdominis contracts, what moves? Does the pubic bone move or does the xiphoid process move? The xiphoid process moves. So the origin is the pubic bone, the insertion then is the xiphoid process because the insertion is always what? The more movable end of the muscle. Right, and so the action of the rectus abdominis is going to be antagonistic to the erector spinae. And so if the erector spinae extends the vertebral column, what's the motion of the rectus abdominis right here? It flexes, right? It moves the other way because it's opposite body compartment. Well, there are a number of muscles right here in the anterior trunk. We've got external oblique, which is the most superficial. And as a matter of fact, it's superficial to the rectus abdominis. It inserts into this aponeurosis. Oh, what's an aponeurosis? What's an aponeurosia? It's a broad, flat tendon or tendinous sheath. All right, so you can see how broad and flat that tendon is right there. Here I can see another one. This is the external part. There's also, this is a superficial aponeurosis. Here is the deep aponeurosis on the other side of the rectus abdominis. All right, so all of these muscles right here perform the same kind of motion, which is flexion of the vertebral column. Okay, so tell me a synergist to the external oblique. The internal oblique is synergist. Give me another synergist. Transverse abdominis. Give me another synergist. Rectus abdominis. Exactly right, because they're all in the same body compartment. Now give me an antagonist to the internal oblique. That would be the erector spinae because that's in the posterior trunk. All right, so you got to become familiar of where these different muscles are by body compartment, and then it should just fall into place very nicely for you. Okay, there's some muscles for breathing. Let's look at these muscles for breathing right here. And these muscles exist just between the ribs. So those we call intercostals. Okay, there is a superficial muscle, and we call that the external intercostal. And then right on the other side, there's a deep muscle that we call the internal intercostals. And so these are attached to ribs. When the external intercostals contract, it raises the sternum anteriorly and superiorly. It lifts it out like that. And when the internal intercostals contract, it pulls the sternum back down. All right, so these are important for breathing. So you should know which ones are for inspiration and which ones are for expiration. So the model maybe that you should have in your mind is that of a bellows. Have you ever used a bellows in a fireplace when you're trying to start a fire with wood? It's kind of like an accordion. It's got two handles on it. Right, and it sucks air in and blows air out. And so when does a bellows suck air in? When you bring the handles together or you bring the handles apart? Push. When you pull them apart, right, the air runs into the bellows, and when you push the handles together, air runs out pretty fast. Right? So the physics behind that is that when a volume increases, that sucks air in. right? So when you pull the handles apart, air runs in, and when you decrease the volume, air is going to rush out of that compartment. So which one of these muscles acts like pulling the bellows open? It is these externals right here. Okay, when the externals contract, it lifts the sternum anteriorly and superiorly. And if we could look laterally, it also lifts the rib cage laterally as well, up and out. So the sternum goes up and anterior, the ribs go up and lateral. That's opening the bellows. All right, so which way is air going to run? With the external intercostals contracting, air is going to enter the lungs. All right, and when the internal intercostals contract, it's going to pull the sternum down, all right, and posteriorly, and the ribs are going to be pulled medially and inferiorly as well. So when the internal intercostals contract, what happens to air? It is pushed out. So these are important muscles for inspiration. When we get to the respiratory chapter, we'll look a little bit more detail. But external intercostals are for inspiration. The internal intercostals are for expiration. It's kind of funny the way they're named. But they're named by anatomic location, not by the function that they're performing. There's another important muscle, and this is probably the most important muscle for inspiration, and that is the diaphragm. So where would we see the diaphragm? Right between the thoracic cavity and the abdominal cavity. And when a muscle is relaxed compared to when it's contracted, when a muscle is relaxed, is it typically longer or shorter when it's relaxed compared to when it's contracted? It's longer. When a muscle is contracted, it is shorter, right? Because that's what muscle is designed to do, is designed to contract and get shorter, right? It pulls. So let's see if I can draw this diaphragm pretty nicely. I think I can. So here is the thoracic cavity like this. And when the diaphragm is relaxed, it's long, all right? And when it's long, it takes this dome shape, all right? So the distance, all right, is this nice curve right here. When the diaphragm contracts, look what happens to it. Here's the lung again, all right? It becomes shorter. So the distance between A and B right here is a lot shorter compared to this distance. Right? So if this is your house and this is school, can you tell that this is a lot shorter distance than taking this big, long, circuitous route right here? Right? So when it's relaxed, it's dome-shaped. And let me fill this in right here. So when does air rush in the lungs? When the volume, just like the bellows, when the volumes of your thorax does what? Increases, it expands. So what is the volume of that expansion? Can you see that it's this volume right here, if we just consider the diaphragm? This is the volume that the thoracic cavity expands when the diaphragm contracts. So when the diaphragm contracts, what happens to air? It goes in. It rushes in. All right? Okay, so let's review that. What muscles are important for inspiration? The diaphragm when it contracts, and also intercostals. But which ones? The external intercostals. Kind of a tongue twister, but you should remember that. All right, so there are very few nerves that you have to know for the practicum. As a matter of fact, you don't have to know any nerves for the practicum that control skeletal muscle. But remember, skeletal muscle will relax unless voluntarily you send nerve impulses to it to contract. There is one muscle that you should know, the nerve that goes there, okay? Because it's very important for breathing. And how long can you live without breathing? Just a matter of minutes, right? So, what did I say was the most important muscle for breathing? It's the diaphragm. So the nerve that goes to the diaphragm is very important. And it comes all the way from your neck, goes to the diaphragm, and that's the phrenic nerve. All right, and I'll probably just put this, it doesn't have to be capitalized, but I will. Phrenic nerve, just to kind of underscore how important that is. All right, so that's why, so Sometimes when somebody has a spinal cord injury as high as the neck, okay, they lose control of their diaphragm. And then what does a person need? Hopefully. You know somebody that's CPR certified because they can breathe for you if you can't breathe for yourself by doing what? Chest compressions. No, mouth to mouth. Chest compressions are for helping assist somebody's heart that's not beating. Okay. So the nerve that innervates this diaphragm right here is the phrenic nerve. And we're going to look at a little bit more detail about the phrenic nerve when we get into the nervous system in just a little bit. Okay. So that's pretty good. All right, let me go to the internet, and in particular, so you got a lot of excellent drag and drop exercises, but probably you want to know something about actions as well as insertions and things like that. All right, so let's look at these rotator cuff muscles a little bit while I... So did you see how I got here? It was just a page in your blackboard for this week. I think it's still for this week. Okay, supraspinatus. Let's look at the supraspinatus. So you should have a picture in your mind where that is. All right, so it is... All right, so here is the trapezius. It's deep to the trapezius, so let's get the trapezius out of the way. We dissected that out. So here is the supraspinatus. All right, the origin is the supraspinous fossa of the scapula, so it actually, the origin is this medial border right here of the scapula, and the insertion is the superior aspect of the greater tubercle of the humerus that's on the posterior side of the humerus, and maybe to see that a little bit better, let's get, what other muscle do we want to get out of the way? The deltoid. Okay, so here's the greater tubercle right here. All right, and so when this muscle contracts, it's going to pull this insertion closer to the medial border right here, and that is going to cause abduction, right, or raising your arm. Okay, but the insertion is also a little bit posterior, so that's also going to cause a little bit of a lateral rotation. So if you want to isolate that muscle, we can get rid of all these others, right, and see the nice supraspinatus right here. So this is a really handy website. The thing that you don't have to pay particular attention to is what? The innervation of that muscle. Right? We're not going to test you on that. So you can even use the slider right here to visualize that motion. All right, so this is a muscle that works on the arm. What about the infraspinatus? Ooh, what did I do? Infraspinatus. I went back. I guess I got to go back a couple of things. Muscles that work on the... What do we have? Infraspinatus. All right, so where is this infraspinatus? Ah, there it is right there. Let's grab our slider, get rid of the... Well, what muscle am I getting rid of? Trapezius. Let's get rid of the deltoid, because we want to look underneath the deltoid. And then we're going to get rid of the supraspinatus, and maybe a couple of these teres muscles. Yeah, triceps. All right, so there's the infraspinatus. Again, it's this medial border of the scapula, or the infraspinous fossa of the scapula, and it inserts into the greater tubercle once again, and for sure that's posterior. So when this contracts, it's going to pull this posterior part of the humerus toward midline, and that's a nice lateral rotation. All right, so we've looked at two muscles so far that are part of what? The special group of the rotator cuff, because it's an integral part of the joint capsule of the shoulder. All right, so let's go back a little bit more on here. Teres minor, let's look at that one. All right, so get rid of all these muscles right here. Now, which one is teres minor? We got a couple teres right here. Major inserts anteriorly. The teres minor inserts posteriorly, right on the greater tubercle, just like the infraspinatus right here. And so this is a lateral rotator of the arm. And it's also an adductor, right, because it's going to pull the humerus toward midline. Okay, let's look at some other muscles that work across the shoulder. Okay, and one that I want to see is the biceps brachii. I don't see biceps brachii. Here's biceps brachii. Let's see what we've got for biceps brachii. And let's get rid of some of these muscles. All right, so this is nice. So biceps brachii just means that it has two heads. All right, so the long head goes through the intertubercular groove. So here are the two tubercles on the humerus. And here is the origin. This is the supraglenoid tubercle. The origin of the short head is just a coracoid process. All right, so that's nice to see. That's better than your textbook because you can actually do a little virtual dissection. All right, and the insertion, all right, is the tubercle of the radius. And there's also some fascia right here that we call aponeurosa. Aponeurosa is a broad, flat, tendinous sheath, right, over the ulna. And so the action of this muscle is twofold. It works across the shoulder. It also works across the elbow. But what we're interested in is the action on the arm, not the forearm. So the joint that we're interested in is the shoulder, not the elbow, in this particular exercise. So when this contracts, it's going to pull the humerus anteriorly and superiorly, and we call that, what is this motion? Like that. That's flexion. How are you going to remember that's flexion? Model it. Think of it in terms of your hip, all right? Because what's this motion at the hip? That's flexion. So at the shoulder, that's flexion. At the shoulder, that's extension. The same motion that we see at the hip. Okay, so that's flexion. What else do I want to show you? Muscles that work on the arm. Pectoralis major. Let's look at pectoralis major. Okay, so the origin is the clavicle and the sternum. The insertion is this lateral lip of the greater tubercle right here. So the pectoralis is going to be an adductor because it can pull the humerus in, but it can also move the humerus anteriorly. So it's also going to be a flexor. All right, so in that sense, what's the relationship between the pectoralis major and the biceps as it works across the shoulder joint right here? What's the functional relationship? Since they both flex, they're synergists. That's right. And what do we call the muscle that produces most of the motion? If there are two muscles that are synergists, but one muscle provides more motion than the other, what do we call that muscle? That's the prime mover. So the pectoralis major is the prime mover for arm flexion, or flexion at the shoulder right there. Okay, but you can also see that like the teres major, since it inserts anteriorly on the arm, it also is a medial rotator, okay, and also an adductor. But the prime motion is flexion of the forearm. All right, so that's a nice anterior muscle. Does anybody know a posterior muscle, a large posterior muscle, that is going to be what? Antagonistic to the pectoralis. And that posterior muscle, let's see if we have it right here, is the latissimus dorsi. All right, so here is the latissimus dorsi. So take a guess, what's the action of the latissimus dorsi compared to the pectoralis major? It's going to be antagonistic. So if the pectoralis major was a flexor, the latissimus dorsi is the extensor. As a matter of fact, it's the prime mover for extension. So let's see if we can find all these. All right, getting this infraspinatus out of the way, teres minor, teres major, get the triceps out of the way. All right, so here is the latissimus dorsi. All right, so the origin is the spines of a number of thoracic vertebrae, and the insertion, right, is going to be anterior. So it's going to be very, very close to that intertubercular sulcus in the anterior part of the humerus. So when this muscle contracts, we can see it will do a number of things. It's going to adduct. It will medially rotate, just like the teres major. All right. But It's the prime mover for extension. All right, so we had to change the diagram right here. So what is extension? So here is extension, going from this position to this position. And what's this called? That's hyperextension. So latissimus dorsi is also important for that. So pectoralis major and latissimus dorsi are antagonists to each other. That's basically what I wanted to show you with that one. Okay. Let's look at the hip. Let's look at hip. Do we have hip? Thigh, anterior thigh. Okay, a number of muscles on the anterior thigh. All right, so these right here, these medial muscles are going to be adductors. So as a matter of fact, their name shows that, adductor longus. The gracilis is an adductor as well. All right, but we're thinking of going across the hip. So let's look at the iliacus and psoas major. Let's get rid of some of these muscles. Now these are really deep. We have one model in lab that has all these other muscles removed so that you can see the iliopsoas muscles. So all of these that are removing right now, these are all adductors. All right, and we're left with the psoas major and the iliacus. And if we put these two muscles together, because they all insert into the same place, which is the lesser trochanter of the femur, all right, so sometimes we call this the iliopsoas muscle, iliopsoas. And we can see moving across the hip, this insertion is anterior, the origin is posterior. So when this muscle contracts, it's going to basically elevate the femur right here, but the proper term is what? It's going to flex across the hip. So that's an important flexor. All right, it's got some other motions. All right, but that's flexion across the hip. So when people do sit-up exercises, right, when they lift their vertebral column off the floor, they're using these extensors in their abdomen. But when, after they lift their vertebral column up off the floor and do and sit up so they can actually touch their toes, this is the muscle that they're exercising, which is not an abdominal muscle. So if you want to isolate to the abdominal muscles right here, you should only flex the vertebral column, not flex at the hip when you do a sit-up. Does that sort of make sense? Do you sort of see that? Okay, so that is flexion at the hip. Now what about extension? Where would you look to find extensors of the hip? Posterior. So let's see if we can find some posterior muscles. Anterior thigh, we need to go back one. Muscle system, muscles of the posterior thigh. Nice. Okay, so what we want to look at, gluteus maximus. All right, let's get rid of all these muscles right now. All right, so can you see that the gluteus maximus is in the opposite body compartment to the iliopsoas? All right, so the origin is the surface, this posterior and medial surface of the ilium, and the insertion is this gluteal line or tuberosity. We didn't have you know that for the lab practicum. I mean, it's the superior part of the linea aspera that you had to know. All right, so that's the origin. Here's the insertion. So what moves when the gluteus maximus contracts? Is it the ilium or is it the femur? It's the femur because that's the insertion. All right, so let's look and see what happens when that muscle contracts. That is, what we call this, extension. All right, so what's the functional relationship between the gluteus maximus and the iliopsoas? They're antagonistic to each other, right? So we're just looking at some antagonistic pairs. Iliopsoas and the gluteus maximus are antagonistic to each other. Okay, let's move on. So you might want to look at all of these different muscles right here. Let's look at the, since we're right here, there are three muscles that make the hamstring group, and they're in the posterior thigh. So let me just click on this. Maybe we can get rid of some of these really nicely. So here are extensors, right? So gluteus maximus, some adductors, the medius and minimus. All right, and now we're getting rid of some adductors that are medial in the thigh, like the gracilis. All right, and now we're and I want to get rid of that. Oh, I can't get rid of the adductor magnus. All right, but here. All right, so here are three muscles that are superficial in the posterior thigh. And they are the biceps. Now, this is different than the biceps brachii, because where do you find the biceps brachii? In the arm, but this is the leg, right, or the thigh, so that's the femoral region, so this is the biceps femoris. And then there's one right here that has a really long tendon, that's the biceps tendinosus. And then a little bit deep to the tendinosus is the semimembranosus. Maybe I want to show you that in the picture in your book first before I do that. Right here, this is good. All right, so here's the same view. It's a little bit clearer of an image, right? Here's a gluteus maximus. And then, what is this here? Is this medial or lateral on this edge right here? That's lateral, all right? So the muscles from lateral to medial are the biceps femoris, okay? Then the semitendinosus, we can see that nice long tendon. And then deep to the semitendinosus is the semimembranosus. And as a matter of fact, the semimembranosus goes all the way over here to the gracilis. So in the models that we have in lab, from medial to lateral, you're going to find the semimembranosus, the semitendinosus, a little bit more of the semimembranosus, and then the biceps femoris. All right? And these are all going to be extensors at the hip, but also flexors at the knee. So let's see if we can show that. So what do we have right here? Semimembranosus is medial, semitendinosus, and biceps. So which one are we on? We're on the biceps femoris. All right, ischial tuberosity of the adcoxae. That is what? Proximal to the hip joint. And the insertion is way down here on the fibula. All right, it's the lateral head of the fibula. And so when that muscle contracts, right, it's going to work across the hip. And what's that motion across the hip? It's going to pull the knee backwards and up, right? Oh, down. Yeah, it's going to pull the knee backwards. And so that is extension. So that's one of the actions. And look at the other origins for the semimembranosus and tendinosus. It's the same place, right? The ischial tuberosity right here. That's why it's such a big, massive part of the adcoxae, and why it's really rough, because these big, powerful muscles originate there. So all of these, the semimembranosus, tendinosus, and biceps brachii, are extensors of the thigh. Okay, the prime mover, I would have to say, is the gluteus maximus, though, right, which we looked at previously. These three muscle groups right here, sometimes we call these the hamstrings, right? So semimembranosus, tendinosus, and biceps are part of the hamstrings. And we're going to start looking at that next week in lab. Maybe the Wednesday group will. They can start looking at it next week, even though they have just a review session scheduled for this week. All right, so let's go back and look at semimembranosus. Okay, let's stop it right here. Semimembranosus, it's also an extensor at the hip. And what about the semitendinosus? It is also an extensor because, let me grab that and pull that down, because what does it do? It works across the hip from the ischial tuberosity right here. It's also an extensor. Okay, let's look at muscles that work across the knee. Do we have any? Act on the foot, on the leg. That's fine. Okay. So we still have the semimembranosus, semitendinosus, and biceps femoris. Let's see why that is. All right, so notice that not only does the semimembranosus and tendinosus and biceps work across the hip, but the insertion is on the tibia, which means what? That it also works across the knee. And so when it contracts, it's going to flex at the knee. So some muscles have a number of different actions, right? So the hamstrings will extend the thigh, but also flex at the knee because of that insertion. It extends at the hip because of the origin, but it flexes at the knee because of the insertion right here on the condyles of the tibia. All right, so that's the same for the biceps, although the biceps also inserts into the fibula as well, the head of the fibula. All right, so these are flexors of the knee. Where would we want to look for extensors of the knee? Opposite body compartment. So if these are posterior thigh, you want to look in the anterior thigh. Okay, so let's look anterior thigh muscles. So muscles that act on the posterior leg. Okay, we looked at those. How about right here? Okay, so there's a biceps femoris, and in the anterior thigh, there is a muscle group right here. I can't put it all back together. All right, but here's one part of it. This is the rectus femoris. The rectus femoris is part of the quadriceps muscles. All right, and we see that it goes across the hip. Here is the origin, right, the anterior inferior iliac spine. The insertion is into the patella, and then finally into the tibial tuberosity right here. Right, and this patella is a sesamoid bone. It's completely surrounded by that tendon. All right, so when this muscle contracts, just like the hamstring muscles, it has a couple actions. All right, it can flex at the hip. It's the only part of the quadriceps that can flex at the hip. But in this illustration that we have, we're considering the insertion into the tibial tuberosity. So it's working across the knee. It's going to extend. Okay, it's going to extend at the knee. What muscles are antagonistic to this quadriceps femoris? Which ones flex at the knee? Which is going to be the ones in the posterior thigh, which are all of the hamstrings, semitendinosus, membranosus, and biceps femoris. Okay, I want to tell you a little trick. I guess I'm going to go back. How are you going to remember the arrangement of muscles in the posterior thigh? Let's go back to here. So what do we got? Semimembranosus, semitendinosus, and biceps. Well, membranosus, right, is the most medial. Membranosus has a bunch of M's in it, right? So it's really easy for me to remember, right? There's an M in medial. Membranosus has a bunch of M's. Superficial to that is the tendinosus, and then the biceps femoris right here. So maybe just start medially. That's the membranosus. Tendinosus is more centrally located, and then the biceps is lateral. Okay. There are other muscles. So here are the hamstrings, posterior thigh. There are other muscles in the anterior thigh. Let's go find those. And that's these three right here, the vastus lateralis, vastus medialis, and vastus intermedius. So let's get rid of all these muscles. Right, I'm getting rid of too many. So here's the rectus femoris. We see that it inserts via the patellar tendon into the tibial tuberosity. Here's the vastus lateralis. That's part of the quadriceps. Here is the vastus medialis, which is part of the quadriceps. And then this one deep right in here, can we see it? Ooh, it just went away. Okay. That's the vastus intermedius. Let's see if I can show that to you. But these all have a common insertion via the patellar tendon and then insert into the tibial tuberosity. So these are all going to be extensors. Anterior thigh are all extensors. Posterior thigh are all going to be flexors at the knee. All right, let's carry this theme on just a little bit more. Let me see what other muscles we got right here. Vastus intermedius. See where that is. Ah, there it is. All right, so here is the vastus intermedius right here. It's just deep to the rectus femoris. All right, so the quadriceps are rectus femoris. Where's that at? Do I have it? Rectus femoris is right here. here's the vastus lateralis, here's the vastus medialis, and if we get rid of all of those, what do we see? What's left over? The vastus intermedius. So make sure you know what four muscles make up the quadriceps femoris. Okay? And their actions will all be the same in terms of acting at the knee, which is what? Extension. Okay? But there's only one that goes across the hip, and that's the rectus femoris causing flexion at the hip. All right, let's look at some muscles that work on the foot or across the knee. And let's start with tibialis anterior. So in lab, you're not going to look at these until next week. Here is the tibialis anterior. Guess where it's located? Anterior to the tibia. Okay? And the origin is lateral condyle of the tibia. And the insertion is the medial and plantar surfaces of a tarsal. So it's going to come down, wrap around underneath the foot, and insert into inferior or the plantar surface of the foot. So when this contracts, can you see that is going to, it's going to elevate the foot or elevate the toes? What do we call that action when you lift your toes up off the ground? That's dorsiflexion. All right, so let me see if I can get all these other muscles out of the way. Sure, there's the tibialis anterior. When it contracts, right, it's going to dorsiflex. So that's an important dorsiflector. And now when you dorsiflect, how much weight are you lifting up? Are you lifting a lot or little? A little, because what's the opposite motion to dorsiflexion? It is plantar flexion. And when you plantar flex, how much weight are you lifting? A lot. All right, so what would you expect? The muscles that plantar flex to be stronger or weaker than the dorsiflexors? Stronger. All right, indeed that's the case. So the tibialis anterior is not a particularly strong muscle, right, unless you maybe exercise like run. You need a lot of strength when your heel strikes the ground to keep your toes elevated. Right, so that's the tibialis anterior that kind of takes a beating when you're running, and as a matter of fact, it can become inflamed. Sometimes we call that shin splints, all right, when that happens. All right, but since this is a dorsiflexor, where would we expect to see the plantar flexors? In the, yeah, posterior leg. So let's see if we can look at posterior compartment of the leg muscle, of the leg. Sure, let's look at gastrocnemius. So now we're looking at the posterior leg. The gastrocnemius, like some of the muscles that we looked at, actually go across two joints. Right? It works across the knee. It attaches to the medial and lateral epicondyles of the tibia. We might talk about that one in a little bit. But more importantly, it works across the ankle because it inserts into the calcaneus. All right, let's get rid of all these other little muscles right here. All right, so there's the gastrocnemius. You can see it works across the knee. It also works across the ankle, inserting into the calcaneus. So sometimes we call this the calcaneal tendon. But from Greek mythology, we also call that the Achilles tendon right here. All right, so when the gastrocnemius contracts, and you can see the two heads, it pulls the calcaneus superiorly, which then moves your toes into the ground. And we call that what? Plantar flexion, which is opposite of the tibialis anterior. There's another muscle that joins the calcaneal tendon or the Achilles tendon, and it is a muscle that's deep to the gastrocnemius, and that one is called the soleus. So let's go back and look at soleus right here. All right, so we're going to get rid of most of these. All right, so here's gastrocnemius, right? And then deep, moving all of these away, here is the soleus. There it is right there. And you can see that the soleus also inserts into the calcaneal tendon. So what's the action of the soleus going to be? It has the same insertion, right? Notice that the soleus does not work across the knee, but it still produces plantar flexion. So what would you say, what's the relationship between the soleus and the gastrocnemius? It's synergistic, okay? What's the relationship between the soleus and the tibialis anterior? Antagonistic, right? Okay. So this is a really handy website to just view all of those things. All right, what are some other muscles that we're going to be looking at? Okay, none of the foot. All right, well, just to kind of continue that theme, let's see what we have. I don't know if we have these muscles. Muscles that act on the forearm. Oh, yeah, let's do that. No, let's do this one right here. Wrist and palms. Okay, so three of the labs have looked at muscles of, ooh, wait a second. I didn't pass the sign-in sheet around. Dang, here it is. Sign it really fast, and I think you have time. Okay. All right, so three of the four labs have looked at these muscles already. And we're going to look at anterior forearm and then posterior forearm. So what's going to be the relationship between muscles in the anterior compared to the posterior forearm? They're going to be antagonistic to each other. We have a number of muscles in the anterior forearm. What's the relationship of all the muscles in the anterior forearm going to be? They're going to be synergistic. Yeah, that's really good. Okay, so we have four muscles to look at in the anterior forearm. Flexor carpi radialis. So what is the motion that the flexor carpi radialis provides for you? Yeah, flexion. It's in the name, right? All right, so here is the flexor carpi radialis, right? The origin is the epicondyle of the medial humerus, right? The insertion right here is in a bunch of carpal bones, but it's lateral because there's the thumb. And what bone is lateral in the forearm? Yeah, it's a radius, so flexor carpi radialis. That makes perfect sense. What about the flexor carpi ulnaris? Where is it going to insert? In a medial carpal over here. But it's still going to be a flexor, right? So here is the flexor carpi, and you can see it flexing at the wrist. Let's go back and look at the flexor carpi ulnaris. All right, let's bring it all the way down. All right, so here's the flexor carpi ulnaris. The origin is exactly the same, but the insertion now is what? Medial. But nonetheless, its action is still flexion at the wrist. Let's go back some more. What other muscles do we have? Palmaris longus. That's not a very important muscle for us. It's superficial. Let's get rid of it. Right here. Here's the palmaris longus. Look at this really long tendon that it has. It inserts into fascia of the palm, and it is a flexor because it's still in the same body compartment. As a matter of fact, sometimes if you need a tendon for a joint in your body because it's damaged, this is typically what a surgeon can harvest. He can take this tendon from the palmaris longus and sew it back in to support a joint that has been damaged. And the joint that where it's usually placed is in the elbow right here for Major League Baseball pitchers when they hurt their elbow. That's called a Tommy John surgery because it's not a very important muscle. And then here is a muscle. Oh, that's the flexor carpi radialis. We talked about that one already. What about flexor digitorum? It's going to be deep to the palmaris longus. Let's come back here. All right, so the flexor, here's the flexor digitorum, and the palmaris longus is right on top of it. But this is a digitorum because you can see the insertion goes all the way to the digits. Right, so the names of these muscles make it very easy to appreciate. All right, so what do we want to know about? All right, so what view of the arm, what view of the forearm do we have right here? It is anterior, right? Anterior. And this is in lab how I want you to get started. There is a depression in your forearm right about here. All right, so if you're going to reach out and shake somebody's hand, so your thumb is pointing up like that, there's going to be a depression in your forearm right here. There's going to be a little hole between a couple really strong muscles. And one of the muscles is actually pretty small, and the other one is the biggest muscle in your forearm. The biggest muscle in your forearm is this one right here. That's the brachioradialis. Here it is, labeled up here, brachioradialis. And then this little one, okay, this little one pulls, when it contracts, is going to pull the radius over the top of the ulna. What do we call that motion? That's pronation. So guess what we call that muscle, that little one right there? That's a pronator, all right? Pronator teres. So when you look at this right here, I see a letter of the alphabet. What letter does that look like to you? It looks like a Y, okay? I believe that. But what I see is a V, but you'll see a V too, right? So a Y or a V. So here's a V. When you start to look at muscles in the forearm in lab, definitely look for this V right here, and you're going to find that little hole, that little depression. The smallest muscle is the pronator, right? And this big one right here is the brachioradialis, okay? Now, all of these, right, medial to the pronator teres, these are all flexors, and these over here are going to be extensors that are in the opposite side of the forearm. So let's go back to the posterior forearm. Let's see what kind of view we have. All right, so the V is on the anterior, more anterior side of the arm. Here's posterior. And we've got this muscle group right here that goes down to the digits. So this is going to be the extensor, okay, here it's labeled, extensor digitorum. We can see it going down to the digits. And then here is the thumb, all right? So what bone matches up with the thumb in your forearm? That's the radius. So here is the extensor carpi radialis, right? Here's brachioradialis, extensor carpi radialis. And then here is the, it's not labeled, should be the extensor carpi ulnaris. So if this is the radialis, here is the ulnaris, and in between the two is the extensor digitorum muscles right here, because we're looking at the posterior side of the forearm. And these are all going to be what? Extensors of either the wrist or the digits. That's what I would like for you to know about that. So let's go back. What about extensor digitorum? Let's see what kind of motion they have for extensor digitorum. Okay, so here's extensor digitorum right here, and that's going to extend the fingers. Let's see if they have that in here. Oh, nice. Okay, so here is what? Extension of the digits right there. All right, so that's the extent that I want you to know the muscles. All right, we're not going to learn muscles of the hand right here, but just in the forearm and the arm and the trunks. But always just be aware what the relationship is between antagonistic muscles. They're going to be in opposite body compartments. So if you have a muscle that's lateral that causes abduction, where are you going to find muscles that are adductors? Medial compartment. Okay, those are adductors. It's going to pull that appendage toward midline. Okay. All right, so that's it for today. I don't know, where's that sign-in sheet at? It's about halfway done. Okay, so sign your name really fast and keep passing it around. And I'll see you guys up in lab.